Well, I thought to discuss the verses in chapter 12. Do you have your Gitas? There's Bhagavad Gitas right there. Chapter 12, where Krishna is presenting a hierarchy of the systems of yoga, or ways of reaching the stage of perfection. Does anybody know, quiz question, does anybody know what is the last verse of chapter 6 without looking? What's chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita? Dhyan Yoga. And the last verse of chapter 6 is an important verse. It connects with chapter 12. Yoginam api sarvesham vadgatein antaratmanam. You can look in your book, chapter 6. Shradhavan bhajate yomam samayukta tamo mataha. Important verse, very important verse. Often quoted. If you were to make a list of important verses of Bhagavad Gita to learn, this would be one of them. Because in two verses earlier, Krishna is speaking of attaining the supreme goal. When the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor and making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection, after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Then he says, a yogi is greater than an ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruitive worker. So these verses in chapter 12 that we're going to discuss expand this idea that he just described. Therefore, Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. And then he says, of all yogis, the best of all yogis is one who's shradhavan bhajate yomam, one who's engaging himself, always abides in me, always thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service to me. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Of course, Krishna's opinion is more than just an opinion. Krishna's opinion is fact. So there's a hierarchy. Greater than this is this, greater than that is that, greater than that is the next thing, and best of all is always abides in him with great faith, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service, best of all. So then, having made that statement, the first verse of chapter 7, Krishna says, now I'm going to explain how to do that. And then, so chapter 7 through chapter 12, those are the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Six and six makes 18. 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. The middle six are focused upon unmixed devotion. So Krishna is saying, I'm going to explain how you perform unmixed devotion. In the course of explaining unmixed devotion, some previous questions that Arjuna has asked, he's now going to ask again at the beginning of chapter 12. And that is, the question at the beginning of chapter 12 is, please definitively say which you consider to be more perfect, one who worships your impersonal feature or one who worships your personal feature. Chapter 12, text 1. Which are considered to be more perfect, those who are always properly engaged in your devotional service, or those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested Krishna? So it's a very explicit question, very clear, which is by you considered to be more perfect, impersonalists or personalists? Brahmagyanis or bhakti yogis? And the answer Krishna gives is equally explicit. And that becomes important in understanding this hierarchy verses. He says, those who fix their mind upon my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect. He's reiterating in the second verse of chapter 12 the same thing he said in the last verse of chapter 6. Then he goes back to the impersonalist. And what he says about the impersonalist is, those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, the impersonal conception of the absolute truth, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. Now there's an earlier verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says the same thing in a different way. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavan mam prapadyate vasudev sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabha. In that verse he's saying, after many, many births and deaths, bahu janmanam ante, after many births, gyanavan, one who has actually achieved gyan, gyanavan, one who possesses gyan, mam prapadyate. What's the evidence of gyanavan, one who has knowledge? They surrender to Krishna. And what is that knowledge that they have? Vasudev sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. So, connect that with what's here. After many, many births and deaths, same thing is said here. Such persons engaged in the welfare of all at last achieve me. So this is a many lifetime proposition, that at last achieve me is they then surrender to the personality of Godhead. If they come to the position of full knowledge, if they come to the position of transcendental knowledge of Brahman, it's still less than full knowledge. So it's below, and that's Brahma again, that's going to be mentioned in the verses coming up. Then he gives some reasons why the personal realization is better. One is it's one of them is incomplete. Then another, the next text, 5, he says it's very troublesome for those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme Advancement is very troublesome. And then he says it again. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. So to fix a conception of the impersonal feature, the formless impersonal feature, for those who are accustomed to form, it's very difficult. How do you fix your mind upon that which has no qualities, has no form, has no personality? Fix your mind upon that. It's very troublesome. Very difficult. So, conversely, the indication in the next verse is that the personal path is very natural. But those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, and being devoted to me without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pritha, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So an additional feature of going back to Krishna's original question, additional feature of the path of bhakti is it doesn't just depend upon our own effort. Rather, it's Krishna's assistance plus our effort. Or put it like in a mathematical equation, on which is going to be more likely to be successful. On the one hand, we make some effort. Or, on the other hand, we make some effort and Krishna picks us up. Well, Krishna picks us up. It's going to be more effective than just our own effort. Krishna's picking up his devotee is in reciprocation of the consciousness of the devotee that is directed towards the Lord that says, I am very tiny, you are very great, you are my master, I'm trying to serve you, but I'm struggling very hard, please help me. And so, having the disposition of depending upon Krishna, Krishna helps that individual. And if there's another individual that says, I'm independent, I don't care who you are, you're formless, faceless, personalityless, and I'm on my own, Krishna doesn't interfere. Yenikamam prapadyante. As individuals surrender unto Krishna, or regard Krishna, or approach Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates. It's like, say, a teacher in a classroom, and they're teaching everybody in the classroom, but one student is very eager to learn. They come after class and ask many questions, and can you guide me further in understanding this, and the other reference materials I can go and study to understand the subject matter more. And so naturally the teacher is going to give greater assistance to that one who is eager to learn than all the others who are also students. That's natural. So the process of bhakti is natural. the assistance that's coming from Krishna is natural, because the devotee is, by disposition, calling to Krishna for his mercy. So Krishna gives his mercy. So that's the background, those verses from chapter 5, these introductory verses from chapter 12. So the focus for this evening is going to go on verses 8 through 12 of chapter 12. In our study of Bhakti Shastri, you'll come across this term, the Yoga Ladder. These verses are the Yoga Ladder verses. That is, Krishna gives the top rung of the ladder, and then he gives down, descending the next rung of the ladder, and down, descending the next rung of the ladder, then down, descending the next rung of the ladder. So, what's the topmost rung on the ladder? He's already said that in chapter 5. Of all, you know, greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, greater than the fruitive worker, is the yogi. So by all means be a yogi, Krishna has said. And of all the yogis, best is this one, bhakti yogi. So now he's saying the same thing in chapter 12, text 8. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always, without a doubt. So there are these two things, the mind and intelligence. The intelligence is directing our activity. And the mind is where thoughts, the function of the mind is thinking, feeling, and willing, and following in sequence. You contemplate something, the thing you contemplate, you have some feelings about that which you're contemplating, and then some desire. I'd like to have this something, or maybe the opposite, I'd like to get rid of this something. When I was in Mayapur, an ant bit me and it drew blood. So he just, you know, saw some ants, and all of a sudden one ant was on my arm, and all of a sudden there was this pain, and then I looked and there's blood. And I was, and started to swell. And somebody said, oh, that's the poisonous ant. Really? No, first it was the noticing, this caught my attention, and then some thought about, oh, there's some ants, and then some feeling. So there's that natural sequence. Before actions, there's the subtle functions of the mind. And then for actions to be launched, then there's some intelligence guiding. So Krishna is indicating consistently throughout Bhagavad Gita. He says it in different ways, but always think of me and engage in your prescribed duty. This way you'll come to me. So mind fixed upon Krishna, intelligence always engaged in my service. Then he says, you'll always abide within me. Always. Without a doubt. That's the topmost. That's what our objective would be. It's personal worship. And then Krishna says, however, if you can't do that all the time, then follow the regulations of devotional service. for by following the regulations of devotional service, you'll develop a desire to come to this higher stage. The desire to attain me. So, the function of the regulations that we follow, I was having a discussion with somebody today that they, different things, but they like bhajans. So in the morning, they sing bhajans, and the bhajans of Krishna are, bhajans are of names of Krishna. So they were asking, is it really necessary to chant japa? Because after all, the bhajans are names of Krishna. We had it was a very nice discussion about why have some fixed sadhana. Because they were saying that even with their bhajans, it's not like they do fixed number of songs for a fixed amount of time. It's they sit and it turns out to be about an hour, but it's not like a fixed thing. It's once they feel that they're feeling very good about the whole, they're feeling settled and peaceful, then that's when it's time to finish. Then they go and take their breakfast and go to work. We have regulations in bhakti yoga. We discussed a number of things, but the thing that finally clicked with them was that why do we have marriage vows? Well, for that matter, why do we have marriage? If they have, you know, boy likes girl and girl likes boy, just like in America, you know, they could just live together and not get married. Then it's called common law marriage. After some number of years, they don't even need a ceremony. Legally, they're married if they live together for some time. But why do we have marriage vows? Why do we have religious ceremony of marriage vows? It's with acknowledgement of God, it's under the codes and blessings of God and the priest and saintly persons. They sanctify, and then there's vows that are made, husband to wife and wife to husband. There's marriage vows. The marriage vow doesn't make the relationship. The relationship is the commitment to the person. But the vows just formalize that commitment to the person. So, similarly, if our goal is to come to the stage where our mind is fixed in Krishna and our intelligence is always engaged in His directing our activities of serving Him, there's some regulations that help us come to that stage. And with those regulations, eventually come some vows, some fixed number of chanting of Krishna's names, and therefore we have beads, and just by using the beads, we're fixing the number. And so many times make so many names, and it's just, that's not the essence of our relationship. The essence of the relationship is our commitment to serve Krishna, and Krishna's acceptance of us in that relationship. Those regulations that assist us, regulations about cleanliness and regulations about the regularity with which we do things and truthfulness and, you know, things that are regulations in bhakti. They help us to come to the stage where we're fixed, to come to the topmost stage. And even preliminary to that is the desire to come to that topmost stage. So somebody may look at that and say, well, that's all very nice, but I don't know if I can follow all these regulations of bhakti yoga. So what about me? So Krishna gives, in that case, someone that can't follow the regulations of bhakti, then if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulations of bhakti yoga. If you cannot practice the regulations of bhakti yoga, then just try to work for me. Nishkam karma yoga. the subject matter of Chapter 3 and Chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita. Without nishkam means without separate desire or selfish desire or independent of Krishna desire. And then karma yoga, whatever it is that we do, it's for Krishna. We work for Krishna. So it may not be with following regulations of bhakti yoga. Like, let's just say, someone comes to the temple and they like serving the prasadam, or they like helping out in the kitchen, going and cutting vegetables and cleaning pots and keeping the kitchen clean. They like doing that. Or in our Tuako temple, there's a nice man who he does the landscaping. He's not a sadhaka, doesn't follow the regulations of bhakti yoga. But he's a landscaper, and he comes and does landscaping. He mows the lawn and, you know, keeps everything green, waters the lawn and trims the hedges and keeps everything neat and clean. Karma yoga. He's doing it for Krishna. But the temple's not paying him. He likes the devotees. He likes the mood. He likes. So it's karma yoga. But somebody may say, well, that sounds very nice, but I don't know if I can stay in that consciousness, doing all my activity just for Krishna. In fact, this person today was saying, you know, even when I was growing up, I liked thinking of Krishna. But when it came to doing my math homework, I couldn't think of Krishna. And I was thinking, Krishna, why are you wanting me to do this math homework? Because now I can't think of you. Is this a clever trick? Why are you doing this? So, someone may say, I don't know how I can maintain that consciousness all the time of working for Krishna. So, then in text 11, Krishna describes not even karma yoga, but philanthropy and trying to be selfless in that philanthropy. If, however, you're unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to give up all results of your work and be self-situated. So be charitable and be situated in knowledge of the self, in a mood of selflessness, knowledge of the soul, but not necessarily sacrificing unto the Supreme in that consciousness, just being charitable. So that's not, notice in text 11, a few things. Krishna doesn't say, for the other two, 8, 9, and 10, there's the topmost, and if you do number 9, you'll attain the topmost. If you do number 10, you'll come to the stage where you perform devotional practices to get the topmost. But this one is not yoga, it's not linking with the Supreme, it's mode of goodness and selfless acts. Krishna doesn't say that's going to bring you to him. So it's below karma, nishkam karma, yoga, is philanthropy. Another comment is, in this world today, in the name of religion, that's a lot of what religion does, or what's expected of religion, religious organizations and a religious person, or even what they use the word today, spiritual. Spiritual person is mode of goodness person. They do selfless acts and they're very liberal and charitable. But without this, you know, the strong ego satisfaction, apparent ego satisfaction. And I could give you stories, but of first-hand experience of this. But people speak like that to us as devotees. That, you know, their question is, what are you doing to help people? And somebody was asking me this. Well, we're sitting next to one another in the Prasadam Hall in Mayapur. They were, you know, feeding thousands of people. And I said, well, you know, we're feeding thousands of people. There's one thing. I said, yeah, but, you know, you have your deity worship, and you have this big temple, spending all this money for this big temple and your big deity worship. So what are you doing to help people? Well, don't you see that as intended to help people? And we have our literature. The literature is transcendental knowledge. It's meant to help people. He said, yes, you know, but you know, all religions, they have their rituals and they have their doctrine. What are you doing to help people? I didn't really go through all that other discussion because I knew what the man's mentality was. I said, well, we have, here in Mayapur, Prabhupada said that we should feed, that nobody within 10-mile radius should go hungry. So we have one of the halls over there is a Prasadam Hall. It's food for life. And they open up the hall several days of the week, and all the village people can come in, and to their full satisfaction, we feed them nice prasadam. But all that's very nice. You're helping people. And described, we have midday meals and, you know, this temple, that temple, the Juhu temple, we were just there. They serve something like 30,000 hot lunches a day in schools. That these lorries that come in, and they load them up with, you know, big containers of, that keep stuff hot, hot khichdi and some other things. They take them to schools and they serve lunch in schools, by catering their lunch program. And the government gives a few rupees per serving, and so it covers the cost, at least, you know, like the ingredient cost. So we just do that as a service. So people think, oh, you're doing things to help people. Without understanding the deeper way of helping somebody is to take a soul out of the material existence and relieve the soul of the cycle of birth and death. That's helping people permanently beyond, you know, filling their stomach for a lunch or one meal, one sitting. Spiritual welfare. So persons that can't fix their consciousness on the spiritual plane, the recommendation Krishna is giving in text 11 here is just try to be detached from the fruits of your work by giving to a good cause. And try to do so without a selfish motive, or the attraction of the sense of feeling contented because I've done something out of with a charitable purpose to it. I've done a good deed. We know what that happiness is. We've all done things and there's some sense of contentment. So try to find a contentment beyond that, within the self itself, within the soul. Then in text 12, the final of this series, if you cannot take to this practice, now that's going to the Nishkam Karma Yoga, then goes down, engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Then it goes back up. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation. This knowledge, cultivation of knowledge, doesn't mean going to the university. It means Brahmagyan, study of the scriptures, and trying to understand theoretically, by speculative method, what is the nature of the self. So above that is be situated in the self. Above that is fixing the mind by meditative processes, fixing the mind upon in the Dhyan Yoga chapter, back to chapter 6, it's the realization of the Paramatma feature. So now we're going realization of the Brahman feature by cultivation of knowledge, realization of the Paramatma feature by the process of meditation. And better than meditation is renunciation of the fruits of action. So now we're going back up the ladder. Renunciation of the fruits of action. Nishkam Karma Yoga. Renunciation of the fruits of action means offering the fruits to Krishna, performing sacrifice unto Krishna. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. Now, this peace of mind connects with the last verse of chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita. Take your book and look at that. The last verse of chapter 5, Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada calls that verse the peace formula, where Bhoktaram Yagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvamam Shantim Richchati. There are three things. 529. The page number is 270. Page 270. Bhoktaram Yagatapasam. Krishna is the bhokta, or the enjoyer, or the beneficiary of all yajñas. And he's not only the enjoyer of all yajñas, sarva loka maheshwaram, he's the proprietor, maha ishwara, of all lokas, of all creation. He's the enjoyer, he's the owner, but he's benevolent, he's suhrid. Suhridam sarva bhutanam. And understanding those three things, gyatva mam, knowing, understanding me in that way, shantim richchati. One attains peace from the pangs of material existence. So, this is, Prabhupada calls this the peace formula. Three things. Krishna is the bhokta. We're doing things in our life where we're making some sacrifice. Ultimately, Krishna is the beneficiary of those sacrifices. When he is in that consciousness, we're working for our families or helping somebody. Krishna is the enjoyer. Krishna is the beneficiary, ultimately. While others may be secondary or tertiary benefitters, Krishna is the primary. It's for Krishna. And it's natural to do that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And he's the well-wisher of everyone. He doesn't just keep it and like a miser and hoard it. He's giving everything to everybody anyway, so he's the well-wishing friend of every living being. So when one is in that consciousness, one is peaceful. So now he's saying in chapter 12 what renunciation, what Nishkam Karma Yoga, if one can work in the consciousness of Nishkam Karma Yoga, then the mind can be peaceful. Now going further up the ladder, above Nishkam Karma Yoga is following the regulations of bhakti. the person I was speaking today, they're a religious person, but they honestly said, whenever I read Bhagavad Gita, somehow I find myself in the Karma Yoga section, and frankly, I don't understand it. Because I want to understand what is my duty. You know, I'm here for some flash of time, and life is over. Now what am I supposed to be doing? What's my duty? And I know the answer is there in Bhagavad Gita, but I'm not able to discern it. I don't understand what is my duty. I'm thinking my duty is, should I be in this profession or that profession? Or my duty is, should I serve my family, or should I serve my interests, or should I work hard and make lots of money, or should I, you know, what's my duty? It was a very, very interesting discussion. You know, self-searching person. Very sincere, self-searching person. And unlike most people, aware that they don't know. Most people aren't aware that they don't know. They're just going along in life. The idea that's taught in Bhagavad Gita of doing one's prescribed duty without attachment to the results means the results must go somewhere, so the results go to the Supreme. So the consciousness is maintaining consciousness of Krishna even when doing homework, or even when in the office, or even in the home, or even anywhere, even alone. That whatever one does is meant for Krishna. From that consciousness, one can more easily follow the regulations of bhakti in a steady way, because the purpose is of the regulations of bhakti is to fix the mind always upon Krishna, to come to that stage where one is fixed and one's activities are always directed for Krishna in a favorable way. So then that takes one back up to the top of that yoga ladder. We'll go through it one more time. We'll go start at the bottom. The bottom is the unregulated masses. It's like people in general. And above the people in general, there's some beginning of awakening of knowledge of the soul, distinct from the body. And then with that knowledge of the soul distinct from the body, following some kind of regulations where I try to work for the Supreme, Karma Yoga. Within the Karma Yoga, our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidyabhusan, they make this differentiation where it's Sakama Karma Yoga and Nishkam Karma Yoga. The distinction is, I'm offering the fruits to the Supreme in the initial stage because I have some expectation. I put something in the hundi box because I know I'll get back 100 times. I'll get Krishna's blessings, and it's a good investment. Sakam Karma Yoga. Nishkam Karma Yoga is without that calculation. It's just simply for Krishna. It's this is what I should be doing. It's purifying my existence. I want to serve Krishna. Not just money in the hundi box, it's with what I do. My life, the work that I do. It's meant for pleasing Krishna. Then following the regulations of bhakti yoga. When I do this activity of trying to work for Krishna, let me add those things that are going to draw my consciousness even more strongly and directly to Krishna, like at chanting or at reading of Krishna's words, and as we're doing now in Bhagavad Gita, bringing my intelligence to worship Krishna's words. We worship, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who studies this sacred conversation is worshipping me with their intelligence. So bring our intelligence to Krishna, bring our mind to Krishna through regulations of bhakti yoga. Then the topmost stage, mind always fixed upon Krishna, intelligence always engaged in his service. And that way one is abiding in Krishna always. So within that network there's some process of meditation and the development of knowledge, Gyan Yoga and Dhyan Yoga. So those Dhyan Yoga, we already discussed, it's text 12. If you cannot do Nishkam Karma Yoga, then cultivate Brahma Gyan. Better than cultivation of Brahma Gyan is Dhyan, meditation. So that hierarchy goes Gyan Yoga, Dhyan Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. For Nishkam Karma Yoga, then Bhakti Yoga. Text 12. It's very clear. So go back to the first, how the chapter begins. Krishna is being asked by Arjuna, which is better, worship of your impersonal feature or worship of your personal feature? Krishna very clearly answers, worship of my personal feature is considered by me to be best. So that's bhakti yoga. And below that is this Brahma Gyan, cultivation of knowledge, worshipping the impersonal feature. And he places here in text 12 in between is Dhyan Yoga, meditation upon the Super Soul. So that's chapter 6. But then at the end of chapter 6 he says, but the best of all yogis is one who's engaged in devotional service. This is the yoga ladder. Unregulated masses, just as the construction of Bhagavad Gita goes, some knowledge of the self and detached work, dedication of that work to the Supreme, understanding of the impersonal feature, understanding of the Paramatma feature, understanding of the personal feature through the regulations of Bhakti Yoga. And then ultimately, the purpose of those regulations of Bhakti Yoga, absorbed in Krishna, mind fixed, intelligence always engaged in that way. So that's these verses, chapter 12, text 8, through chapter 12, text 12, those verses are called the yoga ladder. In a very capsule form, Krishna is describing, just like there's this little stairway leading up to the kitchen. So first step, second step, one successively leads to the top step. So twice in Bhagavad Gita, the end of chapter 6, and here in chapter 12, Krishna is giving this relative merit or the hierarchy of the yoga systems. And in the beginning of chapter 12, it's why bhakti is considered best. one final thing. Within, it's implicit that when you're on the top step, the merit attained by the first step and second step and third step and fourth step is included in the top step. Meaning that if we simply practice bhakti yoga, we don't have to independently cultivate knowledge, do meditation, and, you know, renunciation of works. Those things are included within the bhakti process. Prabhupada puts it in really simple terms. If you have $1 million, you can take care of your $10, $100 problems without difficulty. It's already included in $1 million. So, therefore, Krishna is recommending in Bhagavad Gita that we take directly to the bhakti process. When there's recommendation to do something else, it's with the understanding, well, if you can't do that, you can do this. So some people find some solace in, you know, there's some recommendation to do this. There's this type of worship, or this type of austerity, or this type of cultivation of knowledge. See, there it is. It says to do it. It says to do it, but it also says, better than that is this. And when you have the better than that, the benefit of this is already included in the better. We don't independently need to do something else. Or the conclusion in chapter 18, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. Mame kam sharanam braja. It's all included in that essence, that act of surrendering to Krishna in devotion. Our act of studying Bhagavad Gita is not gyan yoga. It's part of nurturing devotion by hearing Krishna's words, and as they are presented so nicely, hear them in such a way that it nurtures the creeper of bhakti. Then it's a devotional act. It's not a cultivation of knowledge act. The benefit of studying Bhagavad Gita is not so that we have some more little toys in our information basket. We have a big, you know, big hefty information basket. It's for nurturing our attraction and devotion to Krishna. And that's part of the fulfillment of Krishna's promise in the beginning of the seventh chapter. Now I'm going to explain to you how you can achieve this topmost stage of yoga. All that discussion from the beginning of chapter 7 until here, the end of chapter 12, that's the how-to promise that Krishna has made. He's fulfilling it. Okay, so any questions or discussion on this? I was going to do this with some PowerPoint images, but I'll just do it this way. Because there's charts that show all of what I've just described. The yoga ladder. Yeah.
Thank you very much for the learning class. We have been meditating on this, that in order to fix our mind on the instructions of Guru and Krishna, there has to be a contemplation every moment, saying that which kind of gives us the strength and you know the ability for us to keep for us to have the focus. So you touched upon this in your talk, but how do we actually come to a point where we contemplate every moment, you know, what you know, how to live through one Krishna? Because it, for me, it seems that it's one moment it is there, and the next moment, you know, I get pulled out into something else. How to keep that?
The answer is a devotional answer, not a mechanical answer. When somebody is attached, like let's say, you know, the economy's been going crazy. So the materialist who invested so much in the stock market doesn't have to, you know, try to think about what's happening with the stock market. When he's eating, when he's sleeping, when he's working, you know, his mind is on, I'm losing all this money. Because he's attached. Or a mother with their child. They don't have to practice thinking of their child at every moment. They're thinking of their child at every moment. They're attached. When there's love, you know, the young boy doesn't have to be told, now think of this young girl. Because they're attached, they're in love, they're thinking all the time. They're supposed to be doing their homework and they're looking out the window thinking of boy, girl, because of attachment. So when the stage of love is reached, awakened, then it's every moment. That's the mature stage. And the sadhana stage, the practicing stage, following the vidhis of sadhana bhakti, we try to apply ourselves both in terms of what the vidhi is and also the purpose behind it. When we put on our tilak, it's not just taking some clay and smearing it on our forehead and that's, you know, that's our ritual. It's the contemplation of the name Om Keshavaya Namaha, and what does it mean? Why are we doing this? It's sanctifying the body. It's helping us remember within the body the Supreme Lord resides. The body is a temple, and inside the temple is God. If we're mindful of the purpose of the vidhis of sadhana bhakti, it will help us become attached to Krishna. And when we're attached to Krishna, we'll think of him all the time. If we're attached to something, we'll think of that something all the time.
When doing the material things, we don't get that. But when doing spiritual, like chanting or doing any other activity, I usually get that feeling. How do we get back to that state?
It's the same question asked a different way, and it's the same answer. When we're attached to Krishna, so you in addition to the the things that the direct devotional practices, there's the, you carry that consciousness into the other activities you do as a responsible individual, and you do those for Krishna. That's the art of work. And that yad karoshi yad asnasi yashtahosi dadasi yat, that verse, according to our Acharya's commentary, that's just karma yoga. That's not yet even bhakti. It's detachment, rendering the fruits of that activity unto Krishna. It's karma yoga. combine that with the vidhis, you know, the sadhana, so we could combine the sadhana with the karma yoga aspect, then it becomes bhakti. Then you do it for Krishna. Not just out of detachment, so because I don't want the complicated consciousness of attachment. So I'll try to be detached. Do it for Krishna. You carry the strength of your sadhana into your work. And you do it for Krishna. And maybe challenging to carry that consciousness into work, but that's the challenge of one who's working. And everybody has to do some type of work. So it's the do it for Krishna consciousness. And that's preliminary, once again. So where Nishkam Karma Yoga minus sadhana is just Nishkam Karma Yoga. You combine sadhana as you're doing, and then that becomes, at least potentially becomes bhakti. The work that you do, if done for Krishna, is bhakti. It's according to Sri Brahma Samhita, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary, it's as purifying as direct devotional practices. So we need that purification. He uses the phrase dovetailing. We combine the mood of devotion with the activities that we do and do them for Krishna. I'm sure you have found, and everyone has found, the more attentively we do our sadhana, the more Krishna conscious we are during the day. The more thought of Krishna stays with us during the day, and things go more smoothly. And conversely, when our sadhana is sloppy and inattentive and splayed out, the day is struggle. Even on a day-to-day basis, what to speak of, no longer periods of time. So the instruction is, you do what you are to do each day for Krishna. And to stay in that consciousness, which is your question, you carry the spiritualized state of consciousness from nicely performed sadhana into the workplace. You do it for Krishna. And that how to, how do we do that? It plays itself out in different people's lives in different ways, and it just becomes something that you realize by striving to do it, and consistently striving to do it. Then it's whatever you do, it's for Krishna. Were our teaching otherwise, then we would have a secular religion, where this is what I do for God, and this is what I do for my worldly life. And Bhagavad Gita is not a secular teaching. It's go into the battlefield and do it for Krishna. Or go into the workplace, or take care of one's household duties, or go shopping in the marketplace, or take care of your civic responsibilities, or their social interactions. Do it for Krishna. He's the bhokta. Be in that consciousness. Cultivate that consciousness, taking strength from sadhana.
have a question.
Yes.
You were talking about the ladders. So on each ladder itself, there may be people who are meant to do more, and then there must be people. And I'm talking about the perspective of this world, where some people are meant to do more than others. I mean, for maybe, I mean, in any like at workplace or wherever we go. So how do we know that how much we are doing is we are doing our best, but we have to do more to get to the other level. But when we are on that ladder, how do we know that we have to do more to get to the better or?
Well, there was a premise in your question that I question. The premise is different people are meant to do more. I don't know what you mean by that. My question is, are you saying like it's destiny for someone to be at this stage and destiny for someone to be at that stage?
No, I mean some people try the same thing and they do more, but everybody is working 24 hours, so for some people do more, some people do less.
When you say more, it means like you mean volume, or you mean stages on the yoga ladder?
Yeah, I mean volume, and there are stages of yoga ladder, but on each ladder, like nishkam karma itself. So some people may be doing more for Krishna and some people may be doing less.
Okay, we're saying more for Krishna. That's what it means. When you're saying more, it's more for Krishna. It's not like we get a room full of people and say, okay, read 10 pages and let me know when you're done. This person's done in 5 minutes, that person's done in 15 minutes, and so this person did more. It's not volume like that. It's the consciousness of doing for Krishna. That's what you mean by more? Mm-hmm. Okay. So each of us have evolved to some degree. We have like a trajectory of our spiritual evolution. And somebody that's at this stage of their spiritual evolution, the attainment, their current capacity for Krishna consciousness is only according to their evolution. So that person needs to continue to strive. Whereas another person, maybe many, many lifetimes they've been engaged in the process of bhakti and they've spiritually evolved further. So, you know, they're side by side with the person that has evolved less. So what's important for both of them, or either of them, is that they're continuing to strive according to their capacity to do so. Each of us, is that statement holds. So there's... I'm not sure now what your question is. Subjectively, we should be introspecting. Something that I promised the teenagers that over Christmas break I'm going to spend some time with them. And one of the things I want to focus on with them is self-honesty. It's so important to not like put on an air of I'm this, or the other way around, I'm that. It's just, you know, be self-honest, and according to whatever that position you're in, then you acknowledge the shortcomings, and you look to an attainable next stage that you can strive for, and you strive for it. As you're not being judged because somebody has further in your, or you may be further. None of that. It's just where you are, and you're trying to take the next step, and you're trying to help other people in their path to take the next step, whatever that might be. Just that's what relationships are for. So within ourselves, a question came up in class this morning. Jai Jagannath was speaking about becoming more receptive for Krishna's mercy, or descending mercy. How do we increase our receptiveness? He was saying that sometimes I feel, when trying to give assistance to others in their spiritual life, I find I'm not able to do that so effectively, and I think the reason is because I haven't been able to receive mercy myself adequately, and therefore I can't transfer it adequately. So the response I gave was that one who thinks, I'm there, I've received mercy, and I can distribute mercy very nicely, that person is disqualified. It's not how an advanced person thinks. So each one of us should maintain a humble mood. That's where we begin. And more advanced feels more humble, not I'm more advanced. It's natural. So as we're looking within ourselves and we're feeling, I've made some efforts here in Krishna consciousness, and to some degree, from where I was when I first started till now, there's some progress, but I need to continue to strive to make further progress and think, just like Rati's question, you know, how to, not just while I'm doing my sadhana, but while I'm doing the other things of life and workplace, etc. So we're striving with some self-honesty, self-appraisal. This is where I am. Let me try. And then you give yourself some practical measures of ways in which you can try. By prayer, by intervals of time and reminding yourself of, you know, what's my purpose here, what's my mission, where are my thoughts right now. And just by making those little, whatever they may be, little gestures, is helping to focus it again upon Krishna. And then, you know, at the end of the day, how did I do? Well, this part was okay, that part was really bad. Let me dedicate myself to improve in those areas tomorrow. And then, I'm paraphrasing now Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teaching. And then with eagerness, that reservoir of strength that's going to come to help me do that is going to be tomorrow morning sadhana. So I eagerly anticipate. I can't wait till tomorrow morning to do the chanting. And then from that chanting we get more strength. And then the application, again, of doing for Krishna. Maybe the language would be better, not doing more for Krishna, but doing for Krishna more. So it's not volume, it's, you know, quality of devotion. Each of us should be striving according to whatever our individual position might be. And then even with that, there's the hills and the valleys, the ups and the downs, the doing well and not doing so well. So by what should happen is the sine curve goes up and down and up and down. So what should happen over time, if one is progressing, is the amplitude of the sine curve decreases, but also the axis going this direction starts to slope up. And so it's less high, less low, but more steady. The steadiness then starts to elevate. That's where there's when one is attaining the stage of steadiness in bhakti. And Krishna, relying upon Krishna is one's strength. And doing that in a consistent manner is, it's the gift to one who has become somewhat purified. Because otherwise, until that happens, we're relying upon our own efforts and our own strength and our own merit. And that's material consciousness. Whatever strength, merit, an elevated soul has, they're not that. It's just simply being utilized in Krishna's service with a dependence upon Krishna. That's the distinction. Utilizing everything with full dependence upon Krishna. So that's what we want to strive for, to whatever degree we can, from our relative positions. Anything else? Yes.
Maharaj, how do we overcome the thought of renunciating the fruits of activity? Sometimes it's very difficult. Sometimes we serve some nation, so we feel some happiness. So that is again, that again could be a desire to serve. So that is again a fruit of activity.
Because we want that happiness.
Yeah.
We not so much we want the service to the Vaishnava, we want that sense of happiness.
Yes. And in general also at work also I have felt that sometimes we work to get something. So that is again not prescribed.
Oh, that's very clear.
So that's not prescribed in Bhagavad Gita.
No, it's definitely not prescribed in Bhagavad Gita.
So how do we overcome the renunciation of foods?
It's a little bit like the first question over here. How do we, a verse in chapter 5 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says what is called renunciation is the same as yoga or linking oneself with the Supreme. So, to the degree that you're linked with the Supreme, automatically you're detached. And you can struggle with the attachment, detachment, attachment, detachment. Daivihiyesha gunamayi mama maya duratya. That's a very difficult struggle. But mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam taratite. One can easily cross beyond that struggle just by surrender to Krishna. So when you find that, just surrender to Krishna. It's so simple, it seems too simple. But that's the answer. Just rely upon Krishna. And it's not that devotional service is supposed to be performed with no emotion. When we perform devotional service, there's emotion, there's happiness. But when you experience happiness in serving a Vaishnava, one thing that you can do is immediately give that credit to Krishna. That's because this Vaishnava is connected with Krishna, and I've served this Vaishnava, Krishna has become happy. That's where that happiness is. It's Krishna's happy. We can find happiness in Krishna's happiness. That's nice. Just go the next step. Or same thing expressed in a different way. Someone may praise you. Oh, you've done such a nice service. And you can think, oh no, there it goes. My ego is getting puffed up. And that is, but you know, devotees like to appreciate other devotees. And Krishna likes the devotees to appreciate other devotees. So what do you do with that praise? If you're pure, if you're transparent, it doesn't stick. It goes right to, you know, something other than yourself. You're saying like that just because, you know, you're such a nice devotee. You appreciate everybody, and I, you know, what is it that I've done? It's your mercy and your kindness. You know, you just if there's transparency, that's where it goes. or just it's just by Prabhupada's mercy that we're able even to do devotional service. So what credit goes to me? It goes to Prabhupada. If there's purity, it doesn't stick. So that happiness, similarly, it just becomes, it can become a transcendental happiness, not an ego gratifying happiness. Otherwise, what you're saying is true. It's the conditioning component. But the soul is joyful by nature. And that nature is in finding Krishna's happiness and serving Krishna. And the situation at work that you described without detail, that's just ego. So the antidote is do it for Krishna instead of, if some praise comes, oh, you've done a nice job. Just see how wonderful is Krishna. Like Prabhupada would say about his devotional writings, he would say, why is it that people are mad after these literatures? He said, because Krishna has written them. I was just the instrument. It's written by dictation from Krishna. I just wrote it down. People are mad after these literatures. He would speak in that way, but not out of pride, not out of arrogance and ego, self-adoration, appreciating how wonderful is Krishna. So again, this is a transcendental art of how to be transparent, how to be egoless in the realm of devotional service, in the realm of serving Krishna. So you have to genuinely be in the mood of serving Krishna. That doesn't, it's not disturbance. It's part of all glories to Krishna, or all glories to Guru and Gauranga. And it's not just words, it's what your consciousness is. We're just learning, like, you know, little baby steps. But it's natural. In the mature stage, little baby steps, and the baby's walking. Then he's running. Because it's natural. So the protection is offer everything to Krishna. Don't accept anything for yourself. Any success or praise or happiness or something. Everything for Krishna. And stay there. And you'll learn how to live in that, from that space. Everything is for Krishna's space. I'm just a servant. And I like being a servant.
This may require being Krishna conscious.
Yes.
Throughout the day.
Yes.
How do we do
that? Well, that was his question. It's by attachment to Krishna. Then you're conscious of Krishna the whole day. So that's what we want. We want to become attached to Krishna. That takes a maturing. So don't expect maturing. Expect the, you know, little baby steps. And even with little baby steps, then the baby tumbles and cries. Oh. And they get back up again, a couple more steps. This is just our life in the sadhana bhakti stage is just a field of practice. For something that's completely natural. Bhakti is already there, it just has to come out. And our sadhana is to nurture that. Sadhana meaning not just, you know, the chanting of our rounds, but the practice of everything for Krishna. Keep practicing. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetas chetana. Chaitanya Chaitanya. Chaitanya Snanya Gamino. By constant endeavor, that consciousness becomes fixed. And it goes beyond the practice stage into the spontaneous stage. So keep practicing. Something? No? Okay. Yes?
The same question, Guru Maharaj. I guess in your class you mentioned like we are here for a flash of time. And then during the flash of time we got this spark to awaken our soul for Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And then the more I'm hearing and more I'm associating with devotees, I'm having a idea Krishna is also in details,
That was in his question, Think of Krishna, conscious endeavor to think of Krishna at every moment. Mm-hmm. Details.
So these details, and then, we take vows, and then if you go to the details of those vows, it becomes more elaborate, as you say, think of Krishna every time. But then how can we propel or fan this spark, for real unity? We need a strong fan to keep this, to convert this spark to a blaze. And then we also hear about the moment of consciousness when we are not alert, for example, Jodhvara, he has to take about the deer. So these whole things come up, when we take up Krishna consciousness, at what ladder we are, at what stage one...
Well, this was in our class this morning, Bhagavatam class. We're just recipients of mercy. It's not so important at what stage we were. Somebody may be more evolved, somebody may be less evolved. It doesn't really matter. It's not a qualification or disqualification, eligibility, ineligibility. Just being a recipient of mercy is the qualification, the required qualification. And very quickly, we're brought to the following the regulations of bhakti yoga, that next to the top from. Whatever our prior qualification was or wasn't, that becomes our qualification by mercy. Then it's a question of how careful you cultivate. It's there's different agriculturalists, and here's some seeds. Go ahead and plant the seeds. Then you have to very carefully plant the seeds and nurture the seeds. You'll get a nice harvest. It's the same mercy that's being distributed to everybody. Out of the Bhakti Vriksha group here, it's predetermined that someone's going to be more advanced than somebody else. Mercy is equal. The opportunity is an equal opportunity organization, as they say these days. And it's so how attentive we are to the mercy that's being distributed or being offered, extended to us. It's like a relationship. How attentive are you to that relationship? It's going to be what that relationship is. You invest in the relationship because it's important to you. That relationship is important. You invest in the relationship. Some persons invest in business relationships or something that's going to help them in their education because that's going to help them in their career. And so anyway, this is investing in our relationship with Guru and Krishna. The fan that you are speaking about, that's Prabhupada's metaphor. He He said, it's not, the language that you are using is how do we keep the fan going, but it's the perspective that Prabhupada was placing is that the person who is assisting the individual, he's providing that fanning of the spark. So for our purposes, how receptive are we to those bearers of Krishna's mercy that did bring and are continuing to bring Krishna's mercy into our life? How receptive are we to that? That's the fan. The conduit of descending mercy and our openness to that. That's the fan, the spark. Because this is a descending mercy process. Otherwise, we'd have to assert that, well, it's my qualification. It's my so many, many pious activities. Not so. Not so. It's mercy. That's the fam. Their connection to those persons who are bearing Krishna's mercy and distributing. Keeps the spark growing. Our eagerness to receive mercy. We have to strive, abhyasa. We have to endeavor. But that's not going to do it. It's quite insufficient. It's just not even the right principle. Totally. It's mercy. We endeavor, and we have to be eager for receiving mercy. Okay, so what should we do now? You do have a question. Okay.
In the beginning, you said, when we're doing the bhakti diksha sequentially or random. So
the child was pounding when you were speaking. Could you say it again?
In the beginning, you said whether we are doing the bhakti diksha sequentially or random.
Yes.
So what is the sequence actually? What is the sequence?
Well, what I was wanting to know is, are you going through Bhagavad Gita systematically, like, you know, you cover this group of verses, and then next week that group of verses, and then you understand there's a flow between this and that and that, then you stitch it all together, and you see, you know, you have a quilt. It's not just, otherwise it's like fireworks. It's spectacular, but what's the overall message? So I just wanted to know which way you're doing. The other is okay. It's, you know, it's someone's inspired, they want to discuss this group of verses for some reason, so just like I did. Yes.
Renunciation. By renunciation you will achieve peace of mind. Renunciation of results of the world. So
yes.
What is the difference of this getting peace of mind and getting a perfect stage? Because Prabhupada is mentioning in the 12th verse purport, there are two methods. One is direct, which is Krishna consciousness. The other one is renunciation of the fruits of activities. So,
yeah.
If peace of mind is same as perfect stage,
peace of mind is a subset of the perfect stage. Perfect stage has peace of mind. But one can... So, let's go back to this renunciation, the question you had. There's different ways in which one can renounce. like for, I gave the example, Nishkam Karma Yoga and Sakam Karma Yoga. I can renounce something in a fruitive spirit. I can renounce something with the understanding, I renounce this and I'm going to get that. And that inspires me, because I want that, so I can renounce this. I've seen it. I mean, there are people that come to the temple in a religious manner. They have a certain ritual that they do. Different people have their own little ritual that they do. You know, but part of it is put something in the hundi box, and you can practically hear the calculation of how they're going to get some punya from that. So it's sakam karma yoga. There's some renunciation involved, but it's with some calculation. Then there's people that do charity. They're making some sacrifice. And there's some, you know, as it was discussed, there's some sense of contentment. This person that came today, they said, you know, I don't want to do that, but I know I do that. I do acts that are charitable work. Even with my career, I want to do something where I can serve other people. But I know what that does. You know, I get some sense of satisfaction. It's a perk. It's not pure. It's like I'm getting satisfaction instead of I'm serving people. How do I get beyond that? That was the person's question. So there's different grades of renunciation. So one can just renounce by philanthropy, charitable work. One can do something for God that's beyond just philanthropy, something directly for God, thinking I'm going to get something back from God. So the more complete is without any consideration of that's nishkam karma yoga. There's a further renunciation. But then a complete renunciation is whatever I do. I mean, I just do things for Krishna. My life is service to Krishna. Krishna's maintaining me. I don't have to worry about it. I have to, like, hope that Krishna takes care of this need that I have, this want to have, this desire. I don't have to think about it. Whatever Krishna wants to do is going to be good because I trust Krishna. So I'm just serving Krishna. That's bhakti. Within bhakti, renunciation is already there. I don't have to separately think about renunciation. I'm a sannyasi. I don't have to think, you know, if somebody gives some contribution, you know, how am I going to utilize it for myself? I don't have to think like that. I don't think like that. I don't have to think like that. Krishna will take care of me. It belongs to Krishna. And householder can think like that too. Here's how a householder can think like that. In the bank account that's in my name, and the mortgage that's in my name, and the automobile policy that's, you know, ownership is in my name, actually it belongs to Krishna. I got my name on it, but it belongs to Krishna. And I earn some money, I put it in the account that has my name, I'm the manager of that account, it's Krishna's account, it's got my name on it, then I pay for Krishna's car and Krishna's mortgage and Krishna's insurance, and Krishna's part and parcel living entities that's my family, and it's all for Krishna. Then there's some additional discretionary funds, and I give that to the temple, because it's all for Krishna. Manasa deha geha yo kichumora. So that's, what's the renunciation? It all belongs to Krishna. I'm working for Krishna. Krishna's giving me the ability. Krishna's giving me the intelligence. Krishna's giving me health. Krishna's giving me strength. Krishna is giving me everything and I'm working for Krishna. That guy that, you know, is hiring me, he thinks I'm working for him. I'm working for Krishna. I'll behave in such a way that he's not disturbed. He thinks I'm working for him. I'm working for Krishna. And Krishna is my maintainer. That's surrender. That, according to Lord Chaitanya's teachings to Sanatana Goswami, that's one of the angas of surrender. Krishna is my maintainer. Not, I'm maintaining my family. Krishna is my maintainer, and my family is Krishna's family. Krishna's part and parcel of living entities, and he's given me responsibility to look after these living entities that are his part and parcel of living entities. I have this relationship with my wife, and this relationship with my children, this relationship with my parents, and this relationship with my friends. These are all Krishna's part and parcel of living entities. And I'm the servant. And Krishna is the proprietor. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. And then that's peace. Part of your question, yes?
Yeah. One you explained is working for Krishna. That I understood. The second part here, Prabhupada said there are two paths. One is Krishna consciousness, it's a direct method.
Yeah.
Which is working for Krishna.
Yes, working for Krishna.
The second one is renunciating the fruits of one activity. So, how can you...
So, supposing I'm not a devotee, and I work in the same office as you, and I get you know, same paycheck as you. Now I may think, I read something in Bhagavad Gita about renouncing fruit, so I should do some renunciation here. I'll find a good cause and give something to a good cause, and I'll renounce something. Because it says to do that in Bhagavad Gita. That's renunciation, that's good for me. I'll be less entangled in the reactions of my fruitive work. That's my motivation. I want to become free from the binding force of fruitive work, so I'm going to renounce something. It's not for Krishna, it's for me. I want to become free from the bondage of fruitive work. So that's another, that's lesser. That's what your question is? What's that other path?
Prabhupada here says there are two processes. One process is by gradual development, the other process is direct. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is direct. Direct method.
It's direct, yes.
And the other method involves renunciating the fruits of one's activities. So my understanding of that is there are two things. One is direct Krishna consciousness, the other one is through renunciation. So through renunciation also you achieve Krishna. Through working for Krishna also you achieve Krishna. So I'm not able to distinguish these two.
It's...
Or I'm confusing.
Yes. You can take the stairs or you can take an elevator. The second path is the stairs. Because to go from the renunciation, let's say, you know, I do some act of philanthropy. That's renunciation. That detachment from the fruits of work makes me eligible for receiving transcendental knowledge. And then I become more interested in Brahmagyan. And from Brahmagyan to Dhyan, from Dhyan to whatever it is that I do, I offer it to Krishna. Then the regulations of bhakti yoga and fixed in Krishna consciousness. That's the stair method. Or the ladder. Then there's the elevator method. That's the direct method. You just, you know, press the button. The elevator door opens. You go in. Top floor. And you walk out and you're on the top floor. You can go up the stairs. So we don't have to separately practice renunciation or separately practice cultivation of Brahmagyan or separately engage in Dhyan yoga. The other is The direct method. The elevator method. It's Prabhupada's metaphor. Empire State Building. Go up the stairways or ride the elevator. There's two methods. So the second method is the step by step by step. So from the renunciation, Gyan Vairagya is a couplet regularly found within the Vedas. So from that practice of renunciation comes a more of a taste for the eternal. Detachment from the temporary, renunciation, enhances one's attraction or openness, receptivity for the eternal. Brahmagyan. From Brahmagyan, Dhyan. Fixing concentration upon Sat. Then, better than meditation, said in this chapter, is this engaging in works in the spirit of renunciation. In that case, that renunciation means yoga, unto Krishna. Down here, it's just doing charitable work. Up here, it's for Krishna. And for Krishna, it's not feeding chickens to poor people. Mother Teresa. It's what's pleasing to Krishna. Philanthropy doesn't have that the Krishna regulation to it. Karma Yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga does. It has to be pleasing to Krishna. Otherwise, I can't offer it to Krishna. It's not pleasing to Krishna. So that's... We don't have to... We can know what that other process is, the gradual other process, because that's outlined, it's Vedic. We can know what it is. But even if we don't know what it is, we just do the direct process. It's already included, the gradual step-by-step process is included. We're not missing out on anything. That's the understanding you're reading over. Okay. 9:30. Thank you very much. You have a well-found key.